it's a real pleasure to have our speaker today, Bernie Johnson. I was mentioning that somebody here had recommended that we ask Ernie to speak, and yet we hadn't gotten in touch with him. And so about 3 weeks ago, my wife and I were at the family night buffet, and Ernie and his wife and a couple friends sit down at the table right beside me. And so I thought, if this wasn't a divine appointment, I don't know what is. And so I took my chance and introduced myself to Ernie and told him about this meeting and asked if he would speak. And he was gracious enough to, with his busy schedule, to come here today. And I appreciate all of you being here as well. Ernie Johnson, of course, is Braves announcer and Major League pitcher. Ernie was the announcer for the Braves for 35 years and a Major League pitcher for 9 years, having played for the Boston Braves, Milwaukee Braves, and Baltimore Orioles. He was a member of the 1957 World Champion Milwaukee Braves, which included Hall of Fame players Warren Spahn, Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, and Red Schoendienst. I should know how to pronounce that good German name.
Schoendienst.
See, I didn't know how to pronounce it. He was with the Braves organization for 50 years, retired twice in 89 and 99, was voted into the Braves Hall of Fame in 2001, has won three Emmys for broadcasting, and was Broadcaster of the Year for the state of Georgia for 3 years. Ernie and his wife, Lois, have been married since 1947, have lived in the Polo neighborhood for a year and a half or so, but have been members of the Polo Club since it opened. And I mentioned some interesting links on Ernie. If you do a web search on Ernie, you'll get just thousands of hits. And Ernie is a wonderful citizen, and it's just great to have him be here and really just talk about his life and what he's learned. So please welcome Ernie Johnson.
Longer to get up than I used to. Okay. Thanks for asking me, and I want to say hi to all my Wednesday night buddies. We have a group here that goes out for dinner every Wednesday night someplace. We come here frequently, and then we go to other restaurants in the area. Appreciate them showing up, giving up their Saturday morning. The latest news on in the baseball front is that we have not signed Rafael Furcal yet. I don't know whether they'll sign him or not. He's going to want $8 million a year for about 5 years. And I don't know if John Scherholz wants to part with that much money. We'll know probably in a few days. Ron Guidry, remember him? Great pitcher with the Yankees. He was just named their pitching coach. And Lee Mazzilli is a bench coach now, back with the Yankees and Joe Torre. Joe's kind of keeping it in the family. Stottlemyre left. Frank Thomas was a big bopper. You might remember him for the White Sox. Interesting note on him. He's been injured a lot, but he's supposedly healthy now, and he was going to make about $10 million next year, but the White Sox had a buyout with him for $2 million, so they decided to buy it out, so he has become a free agent. And there are more general managers that are leaving ball clubs than players, really. And been a lot of switches, and I don't think we've seen the end of it. You know me as a broadcaster, but you know, I was a pretty good pitcher too. I have 5 years in the minors and 9 years in the majors. Most of the time, though, I was my title was middle relief pitcher. Isn't that a glamorous title? Really? Middle relief pitcher. Couldn't start and couldn't finish. Mixed in the middle. I took more showers alone than anybody in the National League. I was in there. That is what's different about baseball today. The bullpen is so different. If I went in the second or third inning and I got them out, I stayed the rest of the game. And I won the game. Now you get to the seventh inning, there's a seventh inning specialist, there's an eighth inning specialist, there's a closer, and I think it was a lot more fun. I think we had more chances to win in the old days. But I can't tell anybody how to hit. I hit two home runs in 17 years. One of them was in high school. The other was in the Polo Grounds. I don't know. There's a few elderly people here. And I remember the Polo Grounds in New York. It was 260 to left field and 270 to right field and 5 miles to center field. And I hit a home run in left field. Must have gone at least 260 feet. And it was a curveball off Steve Ridzik. And he lives in Florida now. I used to mention that home run from time to time. And he would call me. He said, "Ernie, stop mentioning that home run that you hit off me." I said, "Well, why?" He said, "My phone rings." And he said, "You mean that Johnson hit a home run off you?" You know? I was never a star. You try to be a star. And my star back was sweetheart Lois. When I came back to Brattleboro, Vermont after winning the war, I was in the Marine Corps, and I met her. She was in high school, and I said, "Well, I won the war." And she said, "What do you mean you won the war?" And I said, "Well, we were losing when I went in." And then she asked an awful question. She said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I play baseball." And she said, "Well, what do you do for a living?" So, you know, there was a big, big learning period right there. Then she saw my first check from Hartford, which was about $250 a month. She said, "I'm going to ask you again. What do you do for a living?" We got married, and she's been a great, great wife, and she has to be to stick with a middle relief pitcher who never made any money. The most I ever made was $15,000 in those days. $5,000 in the 50s was the minimum, just to give you an idea. Today, the minimum is $300,000. Wow. We beat the Yankees in 57, we get $8,500. Today, I haven't seen the latest figures, but the White Sox are probably going to get about $275,000 apiece. So that shows you the difference in salaries and the difference in baseball. But as I mentioned, I'm never a star, and I tried to be, and I got just two or three examples of what it means not to be a star. I'm pitching against the Red Sox, and Manny, you appreciate this. I'm pitching against the Red Sox, and Ted Williams in 1950, and I'm a rookie. Ted Williams comes to the plate, and I try to slip a curveball by him on the outside part. One of the greatest hitters of all time. I mean, if it was over, he could hit it, and if it was an inch outside, he would take it. He would proceed to pitch. The curveball didn't get in there. It got over the part of the plate, and he hit it about 500 feet. Up in the bleachers in right field, and still going. The game is over. I'm a rookie. We go down through the dugout, and the manager, Billy Southworth, puts his arm around me and said, "Don't worry, kid. He's hit him off better pitches than you." These are all true stories. They're all true stories. And I would say, "Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot." You know? But I know what he was trying to say. And then the other was, we're outside of Ebbets Field. I don't know, some of you guys probably saw Ebbets Field. Ebbets Field is one of the great places to see and go to a baseball game. And today, the only fields that are comparable are Wrigley and Fenway Park. But in the old days, we had all these historical stadiums, but today they're all gone except those two. I'm outside of Ebbets Field with Eddie Matthews and Hank Aaron, two guys. I have so much respect for those guys. But we had four Hall of Famers on our team. Sheen Deese, Ben Spahn, and Aaron and Matthews. Well, I'm outside Ebbets Field, and the kids are all over the place. And I'm standing with Matthews and Aaron. We're up against the wall, and the kids are all over these two guys wanting their autographs, you know. They're, get on autographs, and I'm standing right beside them. Nothing, you know. I'm standing right beside them. Finally, Matthew said, "Why don't you ask Ernie for his autograph? He'll be a star someday." The kid said, "We'll wait." And then one more. You know, you get your buddies. You get your buddies that when you're playing ball, you all of a sudden you run into, say, Polo Grounds or someplace, and here these guys come down from Vermont, Brattleboro, Vermont, where I was born and raised, and they come down for the game, and they want me to play, and they're sitting behind the dugout, and they're yelling, "We want Johnson. We want Johnson." And this goes on for part of an inning. "We want Johnson." And finally, Fred Haney, the manager, looks over at me and sits on the bench and says, "Hey, Ernie, go see what those guys want." That gives you, you know, that gives you. I don't want to be too long. We'll turn this into a hot stove league. If you've got some questions at the end, you can shoot them at me. But I gotta tell you about Warren Spahn. I mean, I've never made a speech, I think, in the last 30 years without mentioning Spahn. He was a good friend. He was in the Battle of Bulge. He got a battlefield commission. Missed 3 years in the major leagues, and he still won 363 games. And you wonder, that's not really taken into consideration. That's not, people aren't giving credit for that. I mean, Bob Feller won 285 ball games. He was in the service for 4 years. He would have won 20 a year easy, because he was right in his prime when he went in the service. But Spahn won, he went 363 games, and he wore it so well. Somebody once said that, gee, Spahn, those batters scare you? He said, no, the only thing that's ever scared me is bullets. he took baseball very lightly. He didn't care if the bases were loaded or what. He'd get you out. Left-hander with a big nose. He had a big nose. Remember the old Pontiac cars with a big Indian head? We call him Pontiac. He and Hank Sauer were Pontiac. Hank Sauer played for the Cubs, had a big nose, and Spahn, we call him Pontiac, and that he'd laugh, he could take it, no offense to any left-handers in the group, but if there's nine players out on a field, and one's got his hat on crooked, I guarantee you he'll be a lefty. I guarantee you. They pull that hat on there. And that was Spahn. And he had that hat on. And we used to kid him about his move to first base. And he said, I just got a good move. And he said, nah, you haven't got a really a good move. Because when you got a man at first base, and you take your stretch, and he had a great pickoff move. I mean, take your stretch. Come down, and all you can do is move your head and breathe, or it's a balk. I mean, this is really amazing. But you can move your head. And so Spahn he'd get down and he'd give it this, and we'd say, well, you got that hat on crooked, and you got that big nose, you're hypnotizing these guys. they're looking at this, you know. I really got a good move. And he did have a great move. And what he would do, he'd come down like this, and he'd give him that one leg. He had about three moves. And if a kid got a home run off Spahn, I mean a base hit off Spahn, he'd run to first base, and he wants to call his mother and father and say, I got a hit off Spahn, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's so excited on the move. And the coach goes over and says, hey, look, he's got a good move. Watch it. He'll pick you up. The kid says, okay. So he takes him. So Spahn would give him this real dime store shot first. He'd just give it this one look. And here he comes, throw it over, and the boy jumps back, safe. So now it's three pitches later, and Spahn gives him this shot. Boom, he's over there, and that ball is over there. And I've seen him standing right there, they haven't moved yet. That's true. One time he picked off the runner, the umpire, and Joe Adcock. Everybody up, the ball went right down the right field line. I wasn't there the night that they said this move is so terrific. I wasn't there the night that they said he picked a runner off first base and a batter swung. I don't believe that, but that's a Sunday entertainment. But he was a great competitor, and you know, there's another thing about difference about pitching. Spahn would. When he was going to pitch, we'd sit in the bullpen and unlace our shoes. You know it was going to be a complete game. He'd sometimes have 25 or 30 complete games. But this is another thing that's different. We only had one-year contracts. That was it. Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, Warren Spahn, they signed for 1 year. So when you were pitching, like Spahn, a starter, you wanted as much ammunition when you go in to talk to the general manager next year. You want as much ammunition as you can get. And complete games was one. I mean, one loss is fine in the ER. But when that general manager saw complete games, 25, they said, God, boy, this guy is really a horse. And he'd get his raise. But today, you got multi-year contracts. 3, 4, 5 years. You got an agent that doesn't want you to get hurt. And, you know, so pitch your 6 or 7 innings of complete games mean nothing, really. And this is why there are so few complete games. If you'd have gone out to get Spahn, Burdett, or Buell in the ninth inning with a score of 1-0 and go out and say, I'm going to relieve you, you'd have to chase them all over that diamond to get that ball. Spahn wouldn't give you the ball. The manager, that's one of the first things the manager does when he comes out. Before he says anything, he uses, give me the ball.
Now he's halfway home. He's got the ball. But there was one pitcher with the Cubs. He ran out to second base. The manager, Charlie Grimm, was chasing him out there. Get the ball. I had a great time playing, and I've really been lucky all these years. Like somebody said, you never had a real job. I said, well, broadcasting with Skip and Pete, and I enjoyed that. We were good buddies. We still are. And I don't know if you knew it or not, but I also broadcast with Dizzy Dean 1 year and Bob Uecker 1 year. And I'm telling you, boy, that's a treat right there. The Uecker and Dizzy Dean. Dizzy Dean wouldn't fly. He always traveled by train. He wouldn't fly. He was afraid to fly. But he ballooned up to about 300 pounds, but he wouldn't fly. And I believe he had a heart attack at age 62 or 3, but he was not going to fly. But he was so funny. And he had the big white hat and the whole business. And he just a super guy to work with. And, of course, Uecker, you know all his sayings and all. He asked how he caught Phil Niekro, the knuckleball pitcher. He said, it's easy. Just wait for the ball to stop rolling, go over and pick it up. That's what he did most of the time. He said, you know, I meet a lot of nice people back then. So it's been a good run, and I've enjoyed it. And might mention that tonight, if you want to watch some football, young Ernie is on TBS at 10 o'clock. They bring in a game from out on the West Coast, usually Big 12 or something. And I got to tell you one more story. Reason for quitting. I got it marked down. A reason for quitting. And this is a true story, too. When I started making speeches for the Braves, I just thought, what was funny? What's funny now wasn't funny then, you know. This wasn't funny then. I think it's kind of funny now. 1959, I'm trying out with the Cleveland Indians. I'm done warming up in the bullpen, and use a lot of hand signs when you're warming up. And the catcher was 18 years old and never played before. That's fastball, slider, curve, wiggle, changeup. Yeah. So you talk to the catcher that way. So I got through throwing my fastball, used to sink, gravity and a lack of speed. But I signal for the curve, and the kid looks at me, and I'm going like this, curveball. And this is why I really thought it was time to quit. He'd never played before. Signal again. So then he stood up out of his crouch, and he got back down and said, okay, Dad, throw anything you want. I'll figure it out on the way down. that is true. I'm standing up there. I'm 35 years old, been in the World Series. I'm pitching all these years. And this 18-year-old kid, he doesn't care what I throw. I must be losing it. You got any questions? I don't know how long you want to do this. I can... I made a speech at a Rotary. I said, what time do you guys... How long does this program last? He said, well, Ernie, you can stay here as long as you want, but we're leaving at 1. Any questions? Manny, you said you had a question for me.
I apologize for the comment about that you were signed by Herbert Hoover. I found out it was longer. Ernie, some of the people here might not remember Boston. Remember the name change of the Braves going back. What was the story on that in the 30s?
Well, it happened in the 30s. I was a kid growing up in Vermont. I really don't know why they changed it. They were Braves, and then all of a sudden they said, we're going to be the Boston Bees. And maybe it's because the writers could say, well, the Braves beat the Dodgers at the Beehive yesterday. But they kept it for 3 or 4 years, and then they went back to the Braves. So I really don't know the reason behind it, but every once in a while it might be it came as a result of a meeting where somebody said, why don't we draw some people by changing the name? You see, the Braves didn't draw much. They were playing against, competing with the Red Sox, and somebody said to me, why did they move to Milwaukee in 53, the Braves, out of Boston? I said, I think you'd probably move too if the Red Sox drew a million and you drew 285,000 all year. I pitched in front of 16,000. I started a few at Braves Field. 16,000 was the largest crowd all year. It was against the Dodgers. So Perini knew we had to move. He had to move out of there. And it was a good thing they did. And They moved down to Atlanta. That was a good thing too. Things were getting sour up in Milwaukee. And what had happened in Milwaukee, Minnesota came in up north, the White Sox are south, the Cubs are south. So you go into a big meeting with the Coca-Colas or the Falstaff beers or Miller High Life, and you say, well, I need this much money for advertising. This is a price. And they'll say, we can't pay you that much. There's not enough territory here. You got too many teams around you. So that was one of the big reasons that the Braves came to Atlanta was we would be here in the Southeast all by ourselves. And it would be a great territory for advertising, radio and TV both. Any more questions?
Ernie, tell us why Bobby Cox wins year after year. What's the biggest quality he has as a coach?
I'll tell you, we had our 50th anniversary, wedding anniversary, here at the club 8 years ago. We're coming on 58 next week. But we had our anniversary here. You know who was here? Bobby Cox came. Bill Akrey, they came and had lunch with us and all. And he's a regular guy. Bobby Cox is just a regular guy who, one of the reasons he's so successful is that ball players like anybody else, I don't care if you're in baseball or you're in marketing for a big company, you hate to be shown up. You don't want to be shown up in front of your other employees or in front of anybody, or in front of the media. So Bobby will never do that. If you do something wrong, he'll get you in his office and line you out pretty good, but he's not going to do it out in the dugout. He's not going to do it. He won't show anybody up. So players really like to play for him. And he's a proven winner. He and John Schuerholz, that is quite a team. I saw Schuerholz the other day at a golf tournament, and he said, excuse me for doing this, but I drool now for some reason. I guess that's part of being 81. Anyway, John Schuerholz, I talked to him. I said, how about this Roger McDowell? And he said, hey. They had one meeting with Roger McDowell. He came to Atlanta, and Bobby and John Schuerholz sat down and said, we want you. We want you. He said, I want you guys to. So, now, he's our pitching coach. But he said, Ernie, he was a good competitive pitcher, but more than that, he's a good guy. Mm. And I think that the success of the Braves has been that most of the guys they sign are good guys. Yeah. They want to play, and they're not hot dogs. You'll find a hot dog here or there, but they want to play, and they like the organization. In fact, many scouts and many people in other organizations, when I was on the road, used to say, what we're trying to do is build a team just like you guys. We'd like a Braves team here. We want players that want to play, and we want front office people that want to get out and meet people. And the Braves have built a great tradition, and most of it is because of John Schuerholz and Bobby Cox. Bobby's he's just such a regular guy. I mean, he's got a farm up in the mountains, and he likes to hunt and fish, and he chooses tobacco now and then, which is bad for him. I tell him it's bad. He treats people the way a man wants to be treated. I mean, that's just the way he treats it. And he's very optimistic. He's very optimistic. Okay, any more questions? All right.
Yeah, Ernie, how come Bobby Cox gets kicked out of so many games? Is that just for show, or did you get mad?
Well, it's not for show, because he's not much of a show. But you're right to a certain extent. I have seen managers. And Bobby must have done this on a few times. I've seen managers leave the dugout on a call, leave the dugout, and before they got to the field, you could hear him say, I'm out of here after this one. I'm out of here. Get ready, coach. Get ready, Corrales, because I'm not going to let this one go by. So he's going to, if he thinks he's right, he might argue a little bit longer, but... He's usually pretty close. You think of Bobby, I'm thinking of Leo Mazzoni rocking beside him. Isn't that funny? But Mazzoni is now with Baltimore. And before anyone asked about that, that was strictly money. Yeah. Mazzoni was making maybe $250,000 a year with the Braves. The Braves have a policy. Coaches, and I've never heard this, but the Braves have it. The manager can have a multi-year contract. Coaches have one-year contracts. That's all it is. That's the way they do business. But I knew that they were going to lose Mazzoni because John Schuerholz, no way that he was going to pay Leo Mazzoni $1.5 million, because that's what he got from Baltimore. He got like a three-year contract for $400,000 to $500,000 a year. And you know that John wasn't going to pay that. He would have come up with some more money if it was just a matter of $50,000 or $100,000. But when you get into the millions for coaches, I think John would probably say that we got some players that we got to pay first. We wish Leo well. He did a good job here, but we also think McDowell will do a good job. Right.
Talk a little bit about Lou Burdette.
Lou Burdette, he was another teammate. Won three games in a 57 World Series. This is what bothers me sometimes. You say, I don't know if this guy can pitch on 3 days rest. I mean, somebody's going to start on 3 days rest. They think, holy geez. All of the pitchers in the 50s pitched on 3 days rest. That's all it was. You pitch and you rest the 3 days and pitch again. Now they pitch and rest 4 days, and somebody's got the idea we'll pitch every fifth day. But Burdette, just to show you, in the 57 World Series, he won two games, and he won the third game when Spahn was scheduled to pitch, and he got sick, and Burdette went in and pitched, and I think he pitched on 2 days rest or 1 day's rest. And he shut him out. He allowed one run in three games. Burdette was rumored to have thrown a spitball, and you ask him, and he'll just say, "Well, people ask me. I said, in the bullpen, I couldn't tell whether it's wetting him up or not. But a spitball is a fast sinker. You get some saliva's best right out of you, off your tongue." And you throw it, and it just dies. It's a fast sinker. But he was one of the great competitors. One story about Burdette, and I'm talking too long. One story about Burdette, he's pitching against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he always had a saying in sports, don't rub. You know, if you're hurt, you see a football player hit that line, and he gets up, goes back, and something. He's not doesn't want to limp. He doesn't want to do anything. Don't rub. You know, you're okay. As soon as you do that, you let the other person know they hurt you. Burdette got hit with a line drive right here. He followed through. He had a screwball. Ball hit him. Somebody hit him right there with a line drive. Boom! Hit him right there and dropped at his feet. And he leaned over, picked it up, threw to first base, and the batter's out. Now he walks toward the dugout. He gets down in the dugout. And he gets way out in the corner where nobody can see him, and he goes, "Ooh, I'm dying. By the time they treat him and he gets his uniform zipped back up, here he comes right back up. And that guy that hit the ball is going to say, I hit him with my best shot, he hasn't rubbed yet. This is a little risque, this joke. In closing, I think I've talk all that. I got to tell you, we all have a golf story. Remember, we're at a golf club. This is the latest golf story. And forgive me if it's a little.
That's all right.
Okay? Four golf. I think we told this at the Wednesday night dinner. Four golfers wanted to play golf on Christmas Day. They had the course. Let's play on Christmas Day. Okay, they said, let's do it. If we can get our wives, let's talk to our wives about it. So they meet again 2 days later, and they're going to play. And one guy said, "Jeez, it's going to cost me some money." She said, "My wife said you can play, but you know that fur coat that I've been liking, I'd like that." And another one said, "Well, my wife said that sports coupe that she's always liked, kind of like that." And then the third wife said, "Well, third guy said my wife wants a trip to Europe." And then the fourth guy said, "Geez, you got it all wrong. What do you mean you got it all wrong?" He said, I got up, jumped out of bed, whew, a little cool, but what a beautiful day. It's a great day for sex or golf. And his wife said, "Don't forget your sweater." Thank you all.
Thank you. What a great talk, and even that joke was mild. But I, Bernie, I thought of something just to leave with you, and I thought of this is a book by another man who spent a lot of time in stadiums, It's Thoughts and Reflections on Life Principles by Billy Graham for you here.
Thank you very much. I'm a big fan of his.
Great. Really. And what a great crowd. Thank you for coming today. I'll just share one quick story, brave story. In the early 70s, I was on the Scientific Atlanta Recreation Group there, and it was my responsibility to coordinate the Braves game. So I went down to the Braves and got the tickets and met some of the people there. Well, as a result of that, I was invited to an open house the next year where the Braves players were. And so my wife and I went down there all excited. Well, when you get a baseball player out of uniform, it's hard to recognize him if you don't see the number. And so people were milling around, and all of a sudden somebody would recognize a person and get his autograph, and then a line would form. So they'd recognize another person and start getting his autograph, a line would form for autographs, and I thought, you know, I recognize that one guy over there, and nobody's gone over to him, and so I'm going to get over there before the line forms. So I go over there and ask the guy, I said, would you give me your autograph, please? And the guy says, well, I'm really nobody. I said, gee, what a humble baseball player. So he says, sure, I'll sign it. So he signs it, and I go away, and nobody is following behind me. And I look at the name. It was the guy that gave me the tickets at the office when I went there for something. So, anyway. Thank you so much for coming. Please enjoy the fellowship here a little bit more, and hope you make it in the first week of February when we have our next one. Thank you.
Thank you.